You're listening to The Parting Shot with H. Allen Scott.
I have to admit something. I wasn't sure what to expect from my chat with Chris Pine. I've interviewed other leading men movie stars before, and I have to admit that I'm left kind of wanting more, you know? Well, spoiler alert, not only was I pleasantly surprised by my chat with Chris Pine, but in a small way, I feel like we connected over some of our shared interests. Dare I say that this might be one of my best interviews? I think it is. Also, this wasn't technically the first time we met. He doesn't remember it, but we had a very funny flight involving Chris, myself, and NeNe Leakes from The Real Housewives of Atlanta. You're going to want to listen to find out what happened on that flight, because it was weird. But before chatting with Chris, I watched his new movie, Pool Man. Now, a lot of people had a lot of things to say about Pool Man when it premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival. Now, I've never been one to really care about reviews. You know, I've always believed in that saying, opinions are like assholes, everyone has one and everyone thinks everyone else's stinks. Well, I like to find out what stinks for myself, and Pool Man certainly does not stink. It's just unique. Chris co-wrote, directed, and starred in the film as Darren Barrenman, which is a hilarious name. He's a colorful pool man on a mission to protect the city, Los Angeles, and the pool that he loves. Now, if you're a film buff, you'll see the comparisons and references to films like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Chinatown, and even Big Lebowski. And there's a reason for that, because all of those films have to do with LA history and are about Los Angeles. This is very much an LA film, and that's kind of what makes it so unique. But the film that stood out to me that I kept thinking about while watching Pool Man was Hal Ashby's 1979 film Being There. It's at that moment during our chat when I had that realization with Chris that I realized we were kind of connecting, because it turns out Being There was one of a very impactful film for Chris while making Pool Man. Being There is one of those films where if you love movies, if you love the possibility of what a great film can do for both your world outlook, but also your personal evolution, Being There is a film that you need to watch. And in a weird way, the comparisons, when I was watching Pool Man and I was seeing, you know, I was thinking of Being There, I also know Being There is a misunderstood film too. You know, it's a unique film. It's not a normal narrative film that you watch and you leave feeling like, okay, cool. Like, it makes you think. It makes you question why the script is that way, or why the director chose that, or why the actor chose that choice. And I can see a lot of people being even confused by Being There, just like at the Toronto International Film Festival, people were sometimes confused by Pool Man. Now, I mean, Being There is one of the best films of all time, in my personal opinion, and I kind of see the parallels between it and Pool Man, and I think you will too if you watch the film. It's unique. Pool Man is about joy, and sometimes that road to joy is weird and chaotic and emotional and strange, and I get why some people look at Pool Man and they don't follow what's going on or even be confused, because we're so used to everything, every single story, every single film is handed to you on sort of a silver platter. It's so easily explained. Everything is made to sort of just entertain you. And that's cool. That's cool. And this film certainly does that. There's a lot of funny, entertaining things, but it also makes you feel something. And sometimes those feelings are complicated and they take a little bit of practice to get to those moments. So give Pool Man a chance and watch it and enjoy it and maybe focus a little bit on joy while you're watching it. And I think it'll make you enjoy the film even more. So focus on that joy. You'll love the movie. So let's get to it, because you really do need to hear this story about Chris Pine and myself and NeNe Leakes on this Delta flight. So go on and grab a snack, because I will be right back with Chris Pine.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
It's so nice to meet you.
You too. Apparently, though, my publicist said we met on a...
Well, yes, I have a story about that. Yes, we...
Fight, or do you want to hold up on that?
We technically did not meet, although we did share... It's a funny story, and I think this whole interview was destined to happen because it's been years since it happened, but it was one of the funniest moments on a plane I think I've ever experienced in my life. So I got upgraded to first class somehow. I don't know how, and they sat...
What were we flying?
We were flying, I think it would have been Delta.
Okay.
I think. And I forget the airline. Literally, this was probably 8 years ago. It was a minute ago. And okay. I got upgraded to first class, and they sat me next to someone who I recognized immediately as NeNe Leakes from Real Housewives of Atlanta. So I start talking to NeNe in the most cool, casual way. And then I see you get up to use the restroom. You're across from us. You're not near us really at all. Okay. You get up to, I guess, use the restroom or something. And I see you and I'm like, oh, wow, that's Chris Pine. And she, I don't know if you know NeNe Leakes, but she's kind of crazy. And she was like, who's that? And I said, oh, it's the actor from like Star Trek. And literally she said to me, I don't know the white ones. And it was the funniest thing I think I've ever heard in my life. And so you and NeNe in that moment, it was perfect. It was a memory trapped in time. So I'm so glad that this happened.
Well, I'm happy I could play a part in Delta Airlines first class for you. That makes me feel very special.
Yeah. So just if you ever run into NeNe Leakes, maybe, you know, I don't think you will.
Do you remember me now, NeNe?
Well, the film was fantastic. I remember I emailed after I watched it. I emailed all of, you know, your reps saying how thrilled I was about the film. There's a Golden Girls thing I have to talk to you about. I'll get to that in a little bit. But it was just such a fun, unexpected ride that I went on. Where did the idea come from?
The idea came from talking with Patty Jenkins years ago, and we were having a laugh after shooting, and it was two things. The idea of a pool man and this name, Darren Barenman. And they just made me laugh, and they didn't get out of my system for a long time. And I come up with a lot of ideas, many of which fade into oblivion. And this one just struck a chord with me, and I couldn't let it go. And that was really the genesis. And that was like a snowball. It kind of started snowballing, and more things started coming out as I investigated what the story could be, basically.
Yeah. As a creative, just, you know, coming up with the idea, sure, but how do you make the decision to then want to direct it? And even, I mean, the writing part of it also seems pretty daunting. Like, how do you make that decision?
You know, it was really so much more instinctual than I thought. My whole career is, I got into acting because it was like I did it and I enjoyed it, and then it sort of made sense, and then I was doing it. And it wasn't ever, you know, the only thing I've ever really wanted to do deeply passionately is be a baseball player or Maverick and Top Gun, and neither of them worked out. And this one, it just felt inevitable that I would do it. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I thought I'd get a screenwriter, but that proved to go nowhere. And then as I started thinking about it more, the ideas came, and it was much more instinctual, much more... it was just kind of following my joy. Everything about this whole process was joyful. It was, it was hard work. It was a lot of hard work, but it never felt like I was carrying some sort of onus because I had to or should do it. It's because I really wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm. And you feel, I mean, that's one of the things, that's actually one of the notes. Whenever I watch something, I always like write down the words that come out to me. And joy was one of them. It's like filled.
I'm so happy to hear you. That's, honestly, my shining North Star in this was like, I just wanted to be, I think, maybe it's where I am in my life, but I've always been a perfectionist. I've always wanted to make great art. And I've always been this very hard ass on myself about trying to be perfect. And I lead with my head much more oftentimes than my heart. And I was like, you know what? God damn it. It was COVID and I was going through a lot of personal stuff and feeling a lot. And I said, well, why not just lead from the heart instead and lead from instinct and joy and giggling and catharsis in a kind of positive, joyful way was really all I really wanted to do.
And you really,
so that is really meaningful for me. So thank you.
You really feel that in the film. I mean, it was just fun. It was just fun. There was also sort of one of the things that stood out to me is there seemed to be like a focus on the tactile stuff. You know what I mean? Like at the beginning of the film, the process of him putting the CD in the CD player, putting the things on, clicking the things in, and that happened throughout the film. And it even seemed like the character kept being distracted by the almost the sensory things. You know what I mean? There was, I noticed that as a theme.
Well, it's so fun to talk to. I've been living in this bubble for, you know, 4 years now. So to get to talk to a newbie watcher is so fun. I'm a very visual person. So I have a bit of OCD when it comes to that. So my joy in this was so much, you know, I think oftentimes we've forgotten because now filming is so easy that our medium is visual. It's storytelling, but it's also visual. So I love a beautiful visual image. So to get to talk to the costume department about costumes and to dress DeWanda and everything I wanted to see on her and to get into all of the weird minutia of Darren's trailer, to get into the origami and to do a deep dive on that. And so textures and colors and the color palette and all of that was very important to me. And the more that I got to know Darren, writing him and playing him, the more that he struck me as someone who was kind of deeply, naturally, innately uncomfortable socially. Like he's actually not all that, you know, especially in his dealings with his girlfriend or DeWanda June, he just misses a lot of social nuance. So the things that he can touch and feel that are substantive, or you're like, this is a pool skimmer and that's a pool and you clean the pool, makes a lot of sense to Darren. So I think, you know, it made sense to me and to the character.
Yeah, definitely. And also too, I mean, another thing I love films and I'm a big film person, but like I'm fascinated by actor directors and that process of sort of how it does change as you're directing it. Does it change sort of like how you approach your performance and your acting in the film?
I'll tell you what, I mean, I talked to so many people about it, how to do it. I talked to John Krasinski and I talked to Ben Stiller and I did all my homework, all the homework. Everybody had great things to say. And so much to say that I had all of this anxiety going like, how the fuck am I supposed to turn to Annette Bening and give her some kind of note? And I will tell you the greatest benefit of making an independent film. We shot this in 21 days.
Wow.
For some ridiculous amount of money is that you have no time to be anxious. So all of this anxiety that I've always had before, you know, it's like you work trailer 2 hours. That's 2 hours to build up a lot of nervous energy about how the fuck you're going to do the next scene. Because I had no time, the flow state, the ability to just go in and out of character and to direct and to act and to talk to lighting, talk to costumes, talk to sound becomes so fluid that there is no break in creativity. There's no on and off switch. You just have to simply go with instinct. And it's incredibly actually liberating and in many ways a lot easier, dare I say, to do it because your interface is simply yourself. Yeah. You just have to get out of your own way.
Interesting. I mean, yeah, the other thing that like the thing that when I remember when I was watching it, two of the things that I loved was that it sort of harkens to like great films that I'm obsessed with, but also that it's a love letter. It's like a quirky little love letter to Los Angeles. And I love films. I mean, I love LA and I love the nostalgia of LA and not just the Hollywood component, but just LA and how like LA kind of inspires creatives here to be even weirder in their work. Did you, I mean, I assume you love LA. Like what about LA inspired this story?
It's a great question. So many things inspired it. Look, I'm a product of Los Angeles. I'm a product of Hollywood. I'm a third generation actor. This city is giving me and my family a great deal. It's also can be a very sad town because it can be the boulevard of broken dreams. And the family unit that is comprised of myself and Jack Denisoff and Diane Esplanade, who are Annette Bening and Danny, they are, and Susan, Jennifer, that plays my girlfriend, they occupy this unit of people that I knew very well growing up, which is adjacent to the Hollywood dream. They've touched the dream just enough to still want to be here, but they're not living in Bel Air and they're not living in Beverly Hills. They're not even living in West Hollywood or a bungalow off the Grove in the Beverly, you know, area. They're living in the Valley and it's kind of hot and it's kind of dreary. And there's smog in the San Gabriels in the summertime. And Jack made films maybe 25 years ago, but they were horror films on a B level for Roger Corman. Mm-hmm. And they just touched it and they still want to be in it so badly. Like Jack wants to be in it. And Darren loves Peter Sellers and all these old wonderful actors and Peter O'Toole. And he, you know, there's this shot that I was dying to get and my AD killed me for it, but I wanted to get Cary Grant, Peter Sellers and Peter O'Toole above my bed as Darren, because I were three of my North Stars. But so I love this adjacent to the Hollywood dream thing, this part of LA that PT explores a bit because of his milieu in the Valley and all that. But, mm-hmm. You know, my father's been in the business and he's been rich and dead broke and working and non-working, and my mother the same. So this was really a tribute to those people. You know, there's a meta aspect to this where it's almost as if you gave all of these outcasts, like these people that have, like the Dennis Woodruffs and the guys on Hollywood Boulevard, and they're like, you're going to make a film. It's like as if Darren made this film Pullman for himself. I wanted to have that coloring. And it got me a chance to talk about all the things I love talking about. Like, why isn't the Garden of Allah on Crescent Heights and Sunset Boulevard anymore? Why is it a fucking shopping center?
Yeah.
Why do we keep on tearing down awful buildings? Why? I mean, beautiful buildings to create like boxy fucking cardboard boxes that we're doing now. So it's, there's a lot of me in this, you know. I want the red trolleys back and I want people to watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit so they understand the history of it.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
I mean, it was, even just watching it, I was like, I remember when I first moved to LA from New York, I was a comic and I came here and I was like, the most exciting place to be in Los Angeles is the Gelson's on Franklin, because that's where, literally, that's where you will see every working actors you don't know, but they died on Grey's Anatomy the night before. Like, that is the best place to be, you know?
100%. Yeah. That, Birds, my God, that's right, my neck woods. That's, God, I get my magazines at the corner shop.
Same. I go there. I walk there on my walks every day.
Oh, like, my God. It's my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
My favorite.
Yeah.
So I'm a deep lover of LA, and, you know, it's a love letter to LA insofar as it's my hometown. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the physical space of all. It's a love hate relationship with it. And I love the fact that in the opening scene, it's this kind of washed out version of, you know, deep Reseda. But then once he goes into his noir dream, it's all beautiful, lush darks and shadows at the Biltmore. It's like LA can be many, many different things.
Yeah.
It is the land of make-believe, and it's the land of polarities. So
yeah,
I want to see all of it.
Well, and it's funny you brought up Peter Sellers, because one of the things that I wrote down even before I saw the picture is the Peter Sellers being there, and sort of the other film references of, like, the character reminded me of Peter Sellers in Being There in a small way, but also just the references to Chinatown and, like, even just the feeling of sort of like the Big Lebowski and, like, all of these sort of LA movies that I was getting excited about and thinking about as I'm watching the film, this movie's great for Letterboxd because it just makes everyone want to go, like, look at these other movies and check those things out.
I'm always hesitant to say it because Ashby is Ashby, so I feel like a pretentious prick, but the film was deeply motivated by my experience of watching Being There.
Ugh, what a film.
And I'd seen Being There a lot, but, and I was on a plane, so obviously there's the plane altitude issue, but I'm watching this film and I love it and it's everything I remember. And then he walks on water and then there's a weird Masonic funeral and I'm crying. And I'm like, how did he pull this magic trick? How is this film that's so sweet and delicate and seemingly kind of, I don't know, one line deep into this deep cavernous well at the end? And that was the magic trick I desperately wanted to pull off in this, is that you think it's one film. You think it's this absurdist, potentially screwball comedy with crazy overlapping dialogue, characters that never listen to one another. And you just have these moments of like bottoming out where like Annette has a weird monologue about about despair at the racetrack.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. And then you figure out that this movie's about this whole other thing. And that was the thing that Being There inspired with me deeply, is how can you marry, for him it's a different thing, but ours is basically about a story about an emotionally fractured man who's desperately trying to figure himself out, who goes on this incredibly absurd journey only to learn about the deepest trauma about himself and to find relief. And could you marry those two things? And that Darren is this very classically Hollywood tropish character in the Buster Keaton model, very much in the Peter Sellers Being There. It's the innocent lamb in a world of intrigue and cynicism. What happens when this lamb walks through the world? Does he change the world? Yeah. How does the world change him? And just like Being There at the end, Chauncey's Chauncey, and Chauncey goes on Chauncey's way. And the world is completely changed. And just like Darren at the end, he's a fucking pool man, man. No, I don't want the job. I'm a fucking pool man.
Yeah. I mean, even just how there's a moment in the film. I mean, so the Golden Girls moment. So I have a Golden Girls tattoo. I do a Golden Girls podcast. I'm a big Golden Girls fan. I know those.
Oh, wow.
I'm big in the drag scene.
My business partner, he is off book on, it was his idea to put that.
Well, in. I know them well, those Golden Girls Live girls. I know the drag scene well. I'm very much in that. Great. So I got so excited when that came. I don't want to say what led to that moment, because I don't want to give that away. But what was so interesting about that moment, besides me loving the Golden Girls, is Stephen Tobolowsky is a definition of sort of like a journeyman actor. You don't 100%. Know his name, but you know his face, you know his voice, you know everything about this person.
100%.
And the way Darren and him in that scene connect, it's like, your character's not even shocked by the moment. He's actually kind of moved that he does this, the drag moment, and he's kind of in the silly.
That's what I loved about it, is it's like, one of my favorite moments about it is like, I don't give a fuck what you do. No, you can be in drag. You're just fucking corrupt, man. It's like,
yeah,
I just love the doing away with like, you can be whatever you want to. First of all, I worked with Tobolowsky years ago and I love him. And in fact, the character was originally written as Councilman Tobolowsky, and we had to change it to Torinkowski because we didn't know if we would get Tobolowsky. And so a big thing for me was this idea of tempo, is like, I wanted it to feel like the most chaotic version of, you know, David O. Russell. A lot of what I have dealt with in my life and what I find interesting is listening and witnessing and being witnessed. Like, who is a listener? Who's an actual listener? Reflects back to you and you feel relational. This film is about non-relationality all over the place. People are talking over one another. There are four different conversations happening at once. And I wanted the only time in the film where it all stops.
Yeah.
And there's actually dropped in this, especially with Darren, where this kind of, you know, I pushed what I think I was doing with Darren to the extent of what I felt like was the film could handle in terms of acting, for all of it to drop away with Steven, where they're actually talking to one another. And it's like 2 8-year-olds had written this.
Yeah.
Moment. I'm sorry. This. Okay. I'm sorry. That, do you forgive me? Et cetera, et cetera. And I really wanted it to be as quiet as possible, where these two people are alone. They feel deeply, deeply and unheard and unseen. And Tobolowsky, when he read me, when we hired him, said, you know, this scene, you know, and he trained to be a rabbi.
Yeah.
And so he said, this reminds me deeply of the idea of forgiveness in the Talmud. Mm-hmm. And he read me this whole thing about what it means to forgive in the Talmud. Yeah. And he said, what this needs is both an apology from one side and forgiveness, an apology from the other side and forgiveness. So I rewrote the scene after I talked with Stephen to incorporate this Talmudic idea of the perfection of forgiveness, and how one can see the other. And so it's a very meaningful scene to me because it's, I guess, what I wish for the world and kind of what I wish for interpersonal stuff, where, you know, there's a bunch of yelling in the world and we could just shut up for just the briefest of seconds and allow the other person their moment. Maybe there would be more joy. Who knows? But I'm happy you picked up on that. You're picking up on the stuff I wanted people to pick up on.
Well, it definitely hit me. And just as a Jew, that I didn't know that part was in it. So I really love that. I mean, I felt it without even knowing that it was there.
That's great.
Which was really great. And it speaks to, I mean, Stephen's performance, of course, but also just the actors in general in this film. I mean, to have Annette Bening and Danny DeVito as sort of like, it also, you know, that also is an LA theme too, that these, you're not related to these people. You're not related to anybody in this film, but yet it is sort of this, and from a queer perspective, which is why the Golden Girls Live thing I think is so interesting. There is this sense of sort of chosen family, and this person is an outcast who has to figure out a family unit, and he does it in a very weird, unique way. And that is such an LA thing.
You hit the nail on the head. It's funny. You talked about the first class fight to New York because oftentimes on my flights to New York, there's inevitably a conversation about New York versus LA.
Yeah.
Inevitably, the conversation comes to how fake people are in LA. Mm-hmm. Always, which gets my, like, just like my little pit bulls, the fucking hair on the back of my neck stands up, and I get really defensive. Mm-hmm. And I said, have you ever been to an art party in New York? Ever been to a finance party? You think those people are really truly authentic, real people?
Yeah.
Go with God, man. Have fun. Yeah. I love about LA that you can be anywhere and no one gives a flying fuck who you are, what you are. You're gay, you're straight, you're black, you're white, you're trans, you're a fucking poet, investor. You can be whatever you want as long as you have a really good story.
Yeah.
That's all people care about. And people may think that's fake and people may think, I call it reinvention. It's the land where, exactly right, not only can you reinvent yourself, but you can find community with other fucking weirdos and other people that are in the circus chasing the dream. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Darren's journey is precisely that, is having to put, again, wrapped up in this absurdist screwball comedy, whatever. It's the journey of a man just trying to individuate from the trauma of his nuclear family.
Yeah.
To swim in a pool with his best friends and have a lot of joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, call it a day.
Yeah.
And that's it, pretty much.
I always say that in New York, I spent a long time in New York, and I always say in New York, everyone's trying really hard to be cool. You know, they're doing the thing. And in LA, we'll be honest about telling you where we got plastic surgery and we'll give you our doctor's name. Like, how more real is that? Like, there's just an honesty to it that I think is really refreshing in Los Angeles.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, you know, yeah, you're saying honesty, and that's, I agree. Maybe it's another way of looking at it, but what people call fake in LA, I call, I don't know. It's maybe the kind of, I think, yes, it can be the Boulevard of Broken Dreams for sure.
Yeah.
I would say people come here with a lot of hopeful, joyful energy of creating themselves, creating art. And I think there's a real honesty to that. There is a real honesty to that. Maybe it's just a different way of looking at the same coin. But anyway, I love it here at home. So I can, you know, I get very, very staunch about it.
Definitely. Well, my last question for you is, I mean, a lot of people who will come to see this film and, you know, people, fans of yours will want to see your first sort of film that you directed. And a lot of them know you from the bigger films, the Star Treks, the Wonder Womans, the really big ones. What do you hope they take from this? And in general, what do you hope people take from this film?
You said it up top. I didn't write this as a comedy. It's been really hard to market it because people want to put it in a box. I hope this is kind of a boxless endeavor. The best version of this is when I see people after seeing the film and they just have like a brightness to them. Yeah. Like they're smiling and they're like, I want people to be delighted, mm-hmm. just like delighted at life.
Yeah.
Delighted that they spent the hour and a half watching people do ridiculous things. We've certainly got roasted at Toronto. And I just hope that people have patience, you know, like just patience.
Yeah.
Just have some patience with it. Just take a little bit, unpack a little bit of the edge and like want to have a good time. Go want to have a good time. This is not self-seriousness. This is not, you know, deep auteur. This is great, hopefully great craftsmanship wrapped in a really well-popped piece of popcorn.
Yeah.
That's what I hope. And I would say also, even if people believe it or not, it's probably the most personal thing I've ever made in my entire, it is the most personal thing I've ever, Darren is closer to who I believe I am than anything I've ever played before.
Yeah.
It's like when I got into this business, when people started packaging me as a prince and all of these things, as a kid who was deeply awkward, it was about the farthest thing from what I felt who I was that it could be. So this is, if you want to take a peek into the brain of me, what it's like to be me, this is Pullman is it.
Well, I mean, and it comes through. And I mean, it made me literally, I left the film being like, I don't think I know a lot about water in Los Angeles, but I definitely like this person and I like Chris Pine and I like, I'm leaving very happy. So that's, what more do you want from a movie?
Ostensibly about water, actually not so much. Yeah. Come for the plot, definitely don't stay for the plot.
But I mean, that's the same with like being there in all of the films. It's right. That's, I'm there for these emotions. I'm not there
for... Yeah, I gotta, you know, look, you gotta give them some sort of spine. Yeah. You know, again, also the more that I think about the story, it's in many ways just like a character study of these people. And if you dig these people, I think you'll have a really fun time.
Yeah.
To just hang out with them and see what they're all about.
And there isn't one character that I don't want to know more about. So there, I mean, you know, yeah. Well,
you made my day, man.
Well, no, you made my day. Yes, sir. This was great. And I'm really glad that I was able to finally tell you about my Nene Leakes First Class story. That was,
Search her out and just give her a bunch of my headshots.
Well, I think.
Signed as Chris Pratt.
Well, thank you, Chris, so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks, I really appreciate it.
Let me know what you thought of today's episode. I'm H. Allen Scott on everything. And leave a little rating and review wherever you're listening to this episode. I would very much appreciate that. For the latest news and podcasts, head to newsweek.com and follow Newsweek on all the social platforms. And while you're there, subscribe to my newsletter, For the Culture. We also have a fun, like, subscriber-exclusive audio experience happening called H. Allen Scott's Hot Take. It's just my hot take every Monday and Wednesday where I give you an unfiltered, raw, like it's not scripted reaction to something happening in pop culture. It's sort of like, I liken it to that conversation that you would have with your friend, but you would never like record it. Well, I'm recording it. So go on and subscribe to that. And you can subscribe to Newsweek to get those episodes of H. Allen Scott's Hot Take. Until then, watch something fun and have a great day.